On this episode of Video Culture, we'll talk Fletch and Fletch Lives. Erwin M. Fletcher, you choose.
Did you rewind it?
I don't know.
In a time where everyone has a podcast, in a place where everyone has an opinion, two heroes, Matthew and Ryan, against all odds, are here to save your movie viewing experience from total disaster. Your trip through the video aisles of yesteryear begins now. There will be chills. There will be thrills. And there's a good chance that Ryan will have a coffee spill. They'll discuss the quality, cultural significance, and more detail, frankly, than you bargained for. Here's your host, Ryan Acree and Matthew Essery.
And thank you for joining us for the Video Culture Podcast. I'm Ryan Acree.
And I'm Matthew Essery.
And today we have a very special guest in with us. We have Andy Morris.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad to be here, especially since I'm the special guest.
You are the special guest. And some of you might recognize Andy's voice because he is our intro voice guy.
He's got those golden pipes.
He's like our Don Pardo.
You were going down the list of people to call to be your voice guy, and I'm the only one that answered the phone on Sunday afternoon.
Well,
but thanks. I enjoyed being your voice guy.
Well, you fit the right price.
Triple my salary.
But not just because that you are like our intro guy. Mm-hmm. Why you're here today. You're here today because we're talking about the Fletch movies, Fletch and Fletch Lives, and you have read all of the Fletch books.
I can't remember that I've read them, but yes, I own them, and therefore at some point I have read them, yes.
So a lot of people don't even realize that Fletch was a series, a Fletch series of books written by
Gregory MacDonald, and they're crime novels, or they're not really crime novels, they're mystery novels. And the guy wrote an entire series of them, and over a long period of time, a number of decades, and they're probably his most popular work. Gregory MacDonald made a good living out of it and won multiple Edgar Allan Poe awards.
All right, so we'll be talking about, but we're not going to be, I mean, we'll talk about the books, and we'll talk about kind of the differences between some of the books and some of the screenplay writing and the Fletch character himself. But first, we just want to talk about the Fletch movie.
Directed by Michael Ritchie.
Michael Ritchie.
Who directed The Bad News Bears and The Survivors and some other really great comedy films.
Right. Now, it is true that Fletch was, the screenplay was not written by Gregory MacDonald.
Which is odd, because the books are written in a very screenplay-like way, right?
Yeah, he's Captain Dialogue. And in fact, you'll find a lot of the times in the book you're reading along and you realize that there's a string of two people talking, and he no longer is giving you direction of who's saying what. It's just quotation by followed by quotation followed by quotation. Sometimes you might actually have to stop and go back and reread a paragraph to figure out who exactly said what.
Is it like just like the back and forth dialogue? Right?
Yeah, if it was actually a screenplay and had stage direction on who's speaking, it would actually be a little more helpful. But it doesn't take away from the reading of the books at all. It just sometimes it makes it a little more unique, and you recognize that it's rapid fire dialogue.
Yeah. Right.
So, Andy, as our guest, and since you are a Fletch fan, explain to us the concept of Fletch.
Yeah, and you have to kind of tell me, which do you want, the Fletch from the books or the Fletch from the movie? Because they're two circles, like Venn diagram, and there's a big middle. But
let's start with Fletch from the films, and then we'll get into Fletch from the books.
He's an investigative reporter. He's very smart. He's a wise ass.
A wise crack. You can say a wise ass.
Yeah. And definitely in the film, sometimes is a little more than a wise crack. He's a jerk to people. But at the same time, you know.
That is Chevy Chase. And that's just Chevy Chase leaking through, I think.
But the character is this guy who's an investigative reporter. And no matter what he does, he ends up in situations where there's a dead guy or somebody is near dead or there's some massive crime. And often he might even be potentially framed for it. And he has to find his way out of it.
I think that's a wonderful way to kind of sum up the overarching thing.
Well, and not only that, I mean, he dresses up as these different characters,
yes,
as like a private investigator, mm-hmm, would, to try to get to the bottom of the story. Indeed. He's really like this gumshoe sort of detective.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, more so than, it kind of reminds me like when we did the other, what was that other movie with John Belushi?
The Continental Divide.
The Continental Divide, where he's this newspaper.
He just spring questions like that on me, Ryan.
Trivia, 5 seconds. Where they're held in high regard.
Yes.
These like expose stories, this like post Watergate, you know, Woodward and Bernstein kind of era.
Yeah, it's something that doesn't really exist now. Now, if Fletch was now, he'd be writing for Teen Vogue doing exposés on Donald Trump. But
whoa. Okay.
Sad but true.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think he does really talk. His character is an old school way of looking at journalists, where they're 50% author and 50% gumshoe, right? And I don't know that necessarily. There are definitely those people today that do that work, but a lot of people who are writing for newspapers don't work that way anymore.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Fletch was made in 1985. You have other stars in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Tim Matheson, mm-hmm, Joe Don Baker, George Wendt.
Yeah,
is cheers
as George Wendt, yes.
I mean, yes. Come on. I mean, this is, he plays Fat Sam.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a very apt description, yeah.
But, I mean, what do you think? Andy, I know that you love the movie and love the books. What do you think is the big draw to the movie itself? Like, what is he's this investigative reporter. He's always having wisecracks, but why do people like really like this movie?
Don't you think it's largely because you never know what is going to come out of Chevy Chase's mouth, and you're just assured that it's going to light up the room, whatever it is.
Right.
I tend to think that it's really a character draw. It's about who this guy is and trying to figure him out.
Right. I mean, yeah, it is very unpredictable, and Chevy Chase, that nonchalant sort of...
Just banter, yeah.
Well, I mean, he even his slapstick stuff. I was mentioning to Esri earlier when we were talking, like, even his mannerisms were very sort of nonchalant. They weren't really... They don't really hit you over the head. He really has a very subtle humor about him. And everything, but like he'll hit you over the head with the jokes. Like when he introduces himself, you know, in that first scene, he's a Nugent, Ted Nugent.
Yeah.
You're like, what is going on?
But
here?
His delivery is dry, and that's what makes it work. It's a really obvious joke in a way, but his delivery is dry and so commonplace that it just makes you smile or grin or a lot of times laugh out loud because he just has such a great delivery. And like when he does his pratfalls, he does something where he's very dry with the way he expresses his surprise from doing a pratfall. Like, it's like if you were to accidentally slip and fall on a banana peel, the kind of reaction you might have is what Chevy Chase does. He doesn't like make googly eyes and make like cartoon faces. He seems legitimately embarrassed for a moment.
Or he's looking around to see if nobody noticed it.
Exactly.
And if someone did, it's, I meant to do that.
Exactly. And it feels very real, and it makes it that much funnier. And it's something that no other physical comedy person ever really did with pratfalls and that kind of thing. That was what was unique about Chevy, man. He was really – he is really good at that. I mean, I should talk about him like he's dead, but, you know,
he's not really making movies much anymore.
No, well, that's a whole different conversation,
right.
But right. but he's so good at that, and no one else ever really did anything like that. He had this kind of dry quality to sort of cartoony material.
Well, yeah, he just he exposes the absurdity of the whole, like, situation, basically, in a very sort of, like – a way that you get the joke, like, you know, right off, like singing Moon River and like, you know, all those things are like, you know, we are in the records room. What can I get you? The Beatles' White Album. I mean, it's just like,
it's rhythm. It's got rhythm to it. It's got a patter to it.
A bit of it's stuff that maybe some of us think and we just don't say it out loud.
Yeah.
And his monologue comes out loud and then stacked on top of the dry delivery is what makes it hit.
Well, in the books, is this ongoing monologue like they do in the movie?
Yeah, no, there's a little bit of it, but not nearly to that extent. In fact, a lot of times when you're reading the book, you're wondering why Fletch's character doesn't say more or explain more. A lot of times he internalizes everything and wants people to know hardly anything. He plays a lot of his cards close to his vest.
Right.
And I think that happens some in the books or some in the movies, more so in the books.
Like he's kind of playing dumb, kind of like Columbo would or something like that, basically?
Not dumb as much as he just only gives people the enough information to get himself out of whatever situation he's in. So right. when he's pretending to be somebody else in order to gather some information, he's just totally vague about everything.
Well, one of the things I find very striking about not just Chevy's performance, but the writing and the writing of the screenplay is that he was always very quick to judge, like, who was kind of putting him in an odd situation, right? Like, who was, and he could really tell. I mean, even the names of the people that he was being, like, who are you? And he would give his alias. That's the word I was looking for. Was so witty, and he knew that the other person, like, wouldn't get the joke.
Right, yeah.
He was smart enough to know that they're not even going to think two things about this and just like...
Like when he tells a guy who he's an insurance adjuster and his name is Harry S. Truman.
Yeah.
Harry S. Truman, or saying that he's...
Ted Nugent.
Like Don Corleone. And
yeah,
like
this, Don Corleone.
My
yeah.
family's going to like take over, you know...
He starts talking about Michael and Vito and
Fredo.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Godfather reference. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's great.
So let's talk about the plot of the film a little bit. It's a little convoluted in that sort of like... old school gumshoe detective novel sort of way.
Yeah.
You know, like Mike Hammer type novels. It's got a lot of twists and turns. You know, there's a love interest. But the plot's honestly a little convoluted.
Well, the MacGuffin, as I like yes. to talk about, that you I love that term, by the way, yeah. that I love to talk about now. I'll talk about the MacGuffin. Of what keeps the story going is this, like, why did... Mr. Stanwyck, why did Alan Stanwyck ask me to kill him? Yeah. And what does this have to do with drugs on the beach? Because he's investigating story about drugs on the beach. Yeah. And then Alan Stanwyck asks him to kill him. And then throughout his investigation sort of finds out the two are sort of connected.
Like any good mystery book,
what,
really.
Right. What jumps you is the unique quality that the A story that you think is the A story, drugs on the beach and this guy who's struggling to break open a case, becomes a B story when the A story is, okay, this guy has asked me to kill him and why.
Right. But that is the opening scene of the movie.
Right.
I mean, that introduces it, but then it's the rest of it is all about drugs on the beach, right?
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with
it. It doesn't even come back to that part of it almost to the very end. Like, as I was watching, I almost forgot about the kill me part until you got to the very end again. Like, oh, yeah, that did happen. Yeah.
Or like, oh, yeah, he's going to have to go kill this guy.
Yeah.
I think there was a scene in the middle where he follows Alan and there was like the, you know, where he gets gas in the back of his car and stuff like that. And then.
And then he sees him with the police chief and calls him bone cancer.
Right. Well, there was the whole investigation of the airline and the airplane and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But that was apparently that scene was added in later. But you get to the end and you're like, oh yeah, he's actually gonna have to dress up in the guy's clothes and go kill him and like wait.
Yeah. And we don't want to spend too much time going over the plot because the plot's very very dense. But what's interesting to me, what really surprised me was how well the plot all ties together at the end of it. Like if you sit down and piece it out, it all makes sense.
Well, I think that like every little scene like matters, and all of a sudden at the very end, that's when you see the character of Fletch. That's when you see his most serious.
Yeah.
You know, and he was like, well, no, like read it, like read that letter. And no, this is his
Sherlock Holmes moment. Yeah.
Exactly.
So I feel like you have this beginning where you think he's okay. This guy's a great investigative reporter. Well, then you find out maybe he's a little bit of a scoundrel because his wife's suing him for divorce or he is divorced. And then he gets this, he accepts this deal to kill somebody. So throughout the movie, you're wondering, well, is this the good guy or not? You start to kind of doubt towards the end of the movie whether. Our hero is actually going to kill this guy for money, and then he ties the whole thing up, and you figure out, well, he's been ahead of the power curve the whole time.
Right. Well, I mean, he goes to work at a newspaper wearing, like, a Lakers jersey. You know what I'm saying?
We haven't even talked about his love of the Lakers, which is a big thing in these movies.
Right.
The movie even opens with him with a dream sequence. It's a dream sequence of him playing basketball with the Lakers. He's got, like, an afro, and he's...
Well, yeah, during the middle, he has the dreams.
Oh, yeah, it is in the middle. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, well, when he's on the beach and then he goes back to...
6'4", 6'7", with the afro.
Yeah, that's right. He has a...
Yeah. And that's a great image of Chevy Chase, you know, wearing the Lakers uniform with the afro. It's a little hilarious image.
I know. It is wonderful. I think the biggest part about the movie, though, that I love and that everybody loves is all of these scenes are almost like in a nutshell, like one whole like hilarious scene.
Yeah.
Kind of like the way Saturday Night Live would be written. It's kind of like this absurd scene,
yeah,
and then you just go on to the next scene. So it's almost like little vignettes of things, yeah, that all make, yeah, sense.
And you don't really necessarily even think about how they're tying together either. Like, it almost doesn't feel, you don't see the connective tissue until the very end when he draws it all together for you.
Right.
And that's what's kind of brilliant about the writing. She kind of feels all separated and disconnected until you get to the Sherlock Holmes scene where he's like, this is what's going on. You're like, wow, that's pretty brilliant.
The reveal,
yes.
Well, I mean, I remember watching it as a kid, like, you know, when I was much younger and not even understanding, like, what the plot was. Well, but it was just funny to see him play all these really, yeah, weird
some
stuff.
Of it, yeah. Some of it may have been edited out for television when you saw it
as a kid.
No, I
saw it on HBO.
Yeah, right.
I mean, yeah. So, I mean, or Showtime or whatever the movie channel was at that time. I mean, yeah, but it did play on USA and some of the language
edited for
was
time,
edited
time and running and content.
But yeah, but I mean, it still does come on like shows all the time. I mean,
it's silly vignettes, right, that are all stitched together.
Yeah. And it's I think I don't want to get too much into it, but I think, you know, like I think of movies today. That are like close, like The Big Lebowski is a lot kind of,
yes,
written the same sort of way.
Yeah, the movie I'm going to recommend at the end is very similar. I'm not going to spoil it yet, but there's a movie that's not The Big Lebowski that I think is tonally very similar that does the same thing that just came out a couple years ago.
Yeah, so in the world of plot, I mean, I give it many, many stars. It's a well stitched, well written movie. Even though, you know, there's sometimes debate about how much of it is ad-libbed and how much of it is from the page.
Well, it's incredibly quotable.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many funny scenes. I mean, anytime, you know, you say, you know, it's all ball bearings these days.
Hey,
and then,
yeah,
like, everybody get, like, people get it, like, yeah, oh, you're a Fletch fan. Like, yeah, you just get it. Like, it connects, like, so many people.
Yeah. It feels very improvised.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does.
Really does.
It really does. It really feels like he's coming up with these things, like, on the cuff. And like you said, Andy, before, it's almost like we want to be like the person who says this kind of stuff.
Right.
And like nothing happens to these people. Like if we did these kind of things in real life, like we get punched in the face or something.
I can't go into a hospital records room and ask them if they have the Beatles White Album.
It's just a cup of hot fat or whatever.
Yeah, they're gonna call security and you're going to be hauled
or
out.
Or say your name is Dr. Rosen Penis. No,
Dr. Rosen, Rosen, Rosen. Yeah.
I will say the one thing that Fletch taught me when I was a kid, as long as you act like you're supposed to be there, you can get away with a lot of things.
That is true.
And that, yeah, life lesson has served me well as I've grown up and lived life, because if you act like you're supposed to be there, you can get away with a lot of things.
Right. I have literally walked into the backstage of concert areas by just holding my head up and looking like I was busy and just straight followed somebody in and walked backstage. Right. Wandered around sometimes for quite a while before I get thrown out. So. Yeah. Thank you, Fletch.
Yeah, then, what? Yeah,
that's
I mean,
the spirit of Fletch, for,
yeah,
sure.
I was really surprised how much he came out with it. Nobody thought, you know, much different about it. There was that one mechanic who kind of had his doubts, but yeah, he ran away really quickly, yeah, before that happened. You know?
The other thing is, if you speak with confidence, so that's something, yeah, that Fletch will bamboozle them with just pure unadulterated BS, but delivered confidently.
You should, right, also have costumes.
It, right.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously, carry around a doctor's bag with, yeah, a full set
the
of scrubs in it.
The 49 cents worth of fake teeth.
fake teeth. The gorilla suit. That was one of the things, yeah, he was trying to expense.
The Gibbons suit.
Yeah.
The
Gibbons and then, suit. Yeah, Frank, that's personal.
Yeah, yeah.
But see, I think this has a wide mass appeal to like college kids and college age, yeah, especially guys,
yeah,
because he does have this like huge amount of quick wit that's just like unseemingly just like it's a faucet, like it's almost always on,
yeah,
and he's always saying like something just like outlandish and you're, yeah, just like, oh my gosh, I can't believe he's getting away with this.
Well, and it's very much a hangout movie too. Like you can just put it on, you don't necessarily have to pay a lot of attention to it, and you can look over and there's not going to be something fun happening. So that's what makes a lot of college movies or a lot of cult college films is you can put it on at a party, look at it every now and then and get a little bit of enjoyment out of it and go back to whatever you were doing. Fletch is really, really like that. It's kind of this perfect shaggy dog of like a comedy film.
It's live tweetable. I think there are people out there that when it shows up on cable, they tweet instantly. Yeah. Fletch is on TBS, OMG, live tweeting. And the next thing you know, hashtag Fletch on TBS is running. And, you know, people are just live tweeting as it goes along. And so you can remember all the fun stuff about the movie without even having to watch it.
I mean, I remember watching an episode of Scrubs. And in one of the scenes, like the two guys, like Turk and JD, wanted to watch the movie Fletch. And one of the girlfriends, like, objected and were like, no, we've already seen that movie. And, you know, they replied, like, no, but you haven't seen it with us doing all the lines.
Yeah.
And I think that's the way it is. I mean, I don't know about you. When I watch it with my friends, like, we're doing the lines and we're acting it out and we're having a good time.
It's one of those movies you can't actually watch at the Belcourt because you can't hear the movie because people will just talk the dialogue while you're watching it in a theater. Mm-hmm. Maybe if you see like a revival show at like our local art house theater at midnight,
right?
People will literally shout the dialogue at the screen.
Wow.
Which is great, which means I need to go check this out at the Belcourt.
Yeah, this is probably, I mean, of all the movies that we've talked about like so far, I think this is probably the, of all of our 10 episodes, this is probably the biggest cult following, I think, movie that we've talked about.
It's definitely, I can see it being one of the most beloved films we've talked about.
Like The Fly might have been a little more popular.
Well, The Fly is really well regarded, and it's considered a great movie, but people adore Fletch.
I don't know anybody that talks trash about Fletch.
No. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know one person who doesn't at least kind of like it.
Right.
Yeah.
And if they have, they're like, yeah, that was all right. I hadn't seen it in a long time or something like that.
Well, it's like my parents here, we watched, it's getting close to Christmas, and we watched Christmas Vacation.
Right.
And I think they had not seen it in maybe 20, 25 years or whatever, mm-hmm. but they didn't put up a fight. They were like, That's going to be funny. We remember that's going to be funny. I think it's with Fletch. People are going to say, oh, Chevy Chase is in it. Then I know I'm probably going to have liked it and we'll want to see it again.
Right. So let's move on. Let's talk about Fletch Lives.
Oh, I've got so many thoughts about Fletch Lives.
Okay. So this was, it was a sequel. It was done many years later.
It was done about four years later.
Yeah, it was 1989.
Yeah.
It still stars... The only people that stayed were Chevy Chase is still Fletch.
Mm-hmm.
The newspaper Frank Walker is still there. And Arnold T. Pants Esquire. And yes. I think also the guy, and Andy, you can correct me if I'm wrong. Also the guy, remember Frank threatened to like replace Fletch. And they showed the replacement guy, that like old dude with glasses.
Right.
Like in the background. Yeah. I think he's also in Fletch Lives.
I think you're right, yeah.
Yeah, because he's there, like, you know, doing the same thing. Like, Fletch was like, well, you know, Frank's like, if you don't get back, I'm going to replace you. And there's that other dude.
Yeah, and I haven't looked at it to see if that guy's credited. He doesn't have a speaking line, so.
No, he just stands there and looks real sits there.
I remember at one point somebody suggested that might be Gregory McDonald, but I don't think it is.
No, I wouldn't doubt it. So, go ahead.
So Fletch, Fletch Lives. So talk about Fletch Lives, I've got to go back to Fletch for just a second.
Okay.
The probably the most absurd scene in Fletch is the airport hangar scene.
Yeah.
Where Fletch is impersonating a mechanic. He's talking a lot of nonsense, wearing a goofy outfit, goofy teeth, trying to con these mechanics to give him information. Yeah. And that's a really funny scene, but it's way wackier than the rest of Fletch.
Yes.
And Fletch Lives. It feels like in the writing of Fletch Lives, they were like, everyone loved the airport hangar scene in the first movie. Let's make the entire movie like that. So what you get with Fletch Lives, in my opinion, a movie that almost feels like a live-action cartoon.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's just introduce the plot of what happens to Fletch Lives.
Sure.
Now, Andy, you know Fletch Lives was not adapted from a Fletch movie, right?
Yeah, no, there's no Fletch book that has a plot anything close to Fletch Lives.
All right. It wasn't written by the same screenwriter.
Yeah.
Okay. Because Paramount that owned the rights to, Fletch characters? Yeah. They can do whatever they want to with them. So they write, you know, this fan fiction like type of... type of movie, but the whole idea is Fletch has a aunt from way back that passed on and then like left him his from Louisiana and left him this estate.
And isn't that the plot of like 10 different cartoons.
Yeah, yeah. I know. It's really kind of silly. So you're just like, okay, so now he's going to go down and see what goes on. And you really don't even get the MacGuffin of the plot until you figure out that somebody wants to buy
the... It's like 25 minutes into it. Yeah.
Yeah, before you figure out that, like, somebody wants to buy the property and something weird's going on. So now Fletch has to figure out, like, what's happening.
We're just following Fletch and his mystery machine tooling through
right.
lower Louisiana.
But it's almost like this fish out of water story because he's in the deep south.
Like, and there's so many weird scenes. Like, you have to, like, when he's on the airplane, that's like a very, very Fletch scene. But then this is, and I literally almost turned it off.
The dream sequence?
Yeah, the dream sequence. Like, he falls asleep on the plane getting there, and he imagines himself like a colonel on a plantation. With white slaves, apparently.
So don't do that.
The Underhills. They were in the background.
A little bit of that, though. That's parody of Song of the South, right?
Yeah. Well, eventually, he's all like wearing like the white outfit with the bolo tie, and they're all talking with like Gone with the Wind accents, and he starts singing Zippity Doo Dah.
Right.
And they have like cartoon birds flying in.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt like, it's
what
out of
the
place.
Hell is this?
Yeah.
There was no parody of any other film in Fletch 1 in the first movie.
Yeah, because I had not seen Fletch Lives before, so I was ready for something that at least felt tonally similar, and it's really different.
Yeah.
And there's like 100 extras doing like choreographed dance moves behind him.
Yeah, that scene was really weird. To have a dream sequence of him being like this, you know, Lakers player, and then like now he's like this weird slave owner,
or plantation owner. Yeah,
I didn't even
make the parallel. That's what they were trying to do, was trying to draw the parallel with the Laker dream sequence in the first one.
Yeah.
But man, it just really threw me off. I'm like, what is this? And then he gets there, and it's like every parody you've ever seen of the South. I mean, you got good old boys who are kind of like, how you doing, boy?
Well, yeah. I mean, you got the Klansmen. You got the, you know, his Cleavon Little character.
Yeah, this, and again, I almost turned off when the great Cleavon Little from Blazing Saddles shows up as Calculus Entry, which again, that's a great name.
Great name, yeah.
It's not as great as Noodles Macintosh.
No.
I just want to point that out.
Geometry Fletch.
but yeah, Calculus. And he's doing like this, you know, kind of, I'm trying to think of probably a nice way to say it, but like this kind of like parody of like a black man in like the 1800s, and I'm like, what is Cleavon Little doing here? Right. I felt embarrassed for him.
Well, I think that they try to do a lot of the same things from the first movie of like take these weird, odd scenes, kind of group them together, and in the end, we're going to wind up with this big reveal at the end, right? Yeah. And there's going to be somebody that is going to try to shoot Fletch to try to kill him, but he's going to reveal everything to everybody, and then like somebody's going to come to arrest him. The thing that's like really kind of drawn out about it is that the scenes were almost contrived before they had the plot in place. So it's like, oh, we'll have him do this, and we'll have him do this. Like, well, what are we going to do? Like, I think that it's almost like they were superfluous. Like, they were like really kind of like just
$5 word.
$5 word.
Yeah. Superfluous.
Well, I mean, like the whole scene of him in the biker bar.
Yeah.
Like, that had nothing to do with the plot whatsoever.
They wanted Chevy Chase to say Ed Harley.
Yeah,
Ed Harley.
They wanted to have this moment. They wanted to have a chase scene.
Yeah.
I mean, like in the real, and the first Fletch, they had a chase scene.
Right.
Yeah. So it's like, they're just recreating it, but there was no information that was gained. There was nothing that he found out different. There was nothing that led anything. It was just like it was put in there.
Yeah.
Just to
have so, but the flip side of that, you're talking about Cleavon Little, Calculus's whole point in the plot is exposition.
Right. Yeah.
He basically is only there. They figured out how can we make this guy somewhat interesting because we just need someone for Fletch to ask questions that they can answer.
But it's so it's so racially weird.
It is weird.
Even back in 1989, it would feel weird. And of course, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen this movie, it came out in 1989. We're going to ruin it for you right now.
Yeah.
Cleavon Little ends up being an FBI agent who's undercover.
And he's playing like a dumb Southerner
horribly
poorly.
And that's cool and all that they redeem it at the very, very end. They should have put that in the middle of the film so you wouldn't be cringing through all of his scenes to the rest of it, because it feels really racist.
Exactly.
For most of the movie. And I was just like wincing so much. And then at the end, I'm like, okay, it's an act. I can kind of deal with that.
Right.
But they wait till the very end to reveal it. It would have been more fun. They'd revealed halfway through, and so at least Chevy would be in on it a little bit.
Right.
It doesn't make any sense.
It really doesn't.
Whatsoever.
As with most second movies that are a sequel.
I mean,
that is trying to tick boxes.
This one
falls short some.
It's still Chevy Chase. It's still Fletch. There's still like moments that are really funny.
There are good scenes.
Yeah, there are good scenes.
Is it as quotable?
The Claude Henry Smoot scene is probably by far the funniest. Your house is on fire.
And nobody is a good a character actor sometimes as Arlie Ermey. Because, I mean,
yeah. Arlie
instead, of,
great
instead of a drill sergeant, now you get to see him as a preacher.
Yeah.
And he nails it. It's believable.
It wasn't just a preacher. He was a healer man.
Well, there's a lot of good characters. There's Cleveland Little. There's Arlie Ermey. There's Randall Tex Cobb.
Hal Holbrook.
Call me Ham. I was like, yeah, I love Hal Holbrook. He's not he wasn't in enough stuff, and he's great. But then you got Randall Tex Cobb is like the heavy, the guy in the prison.
Right.
Like, why are you in here? Rape of a dead horse, you know?
You mean Ben Dover.
Yeah, Ben Dover.
That's his character name. That's what I was going to tell you earlier, Andy. Did you know that his character name, the big burly guy, his character name, Ben Fletcher.
Ben Dover.
Ben Dover.
Yeah. for those of you who don't know who Randall Tex Cobb is, he's one of those great character actors. He was in Raising Arizona.
Oh, yeah.
Blind Fury. Really kind of an 80s movie character actor champion, in my opinion. Whatever they need, like a big, burly, tough-looking guy, they got him.
Right. And even Phil Hartman is in the movie.
Phil Hartman works in the toxic waste plant. That's part of the plot. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. But even the Southern girls that he meets, right? Who were just like Southern girls.
Super
they were
caricature.
Just like, yeah, they were super character.
Kind of. Yeah.
It felt, we're all from the South, right?
Yeah. Like, I'm from the deep South. I've never met a girl in my life who talked like that.
Yeah. I mean, it almost was like a caricature from somebody who wasn't from the South.
Oh, and it was written by some guy in L.A. You know it was.
The only way they could have got the South worse is if they'd got Tommy Lee Jones to come in and do his accent.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I still find it funny. It just, it didn't hit all the boxes. It didn't make it funny. There were some funny scenes, but that was about
it's,
it.
It's like, quotable.
It wasn't tied.
That's its redeeming quality, in my opinion, is you can quote it just as much as you quote the first film.
Yeah.
But going back to the book... What were the character sort of differences? Like when you first talked about the two characters between Fletch and from the movie and Fletch from the book, what is different about the Fletch character in the book?
I think he plays things a lot closer to the vest. He's not nearly as cynical or sarcastic. He's just always trying to get ahead of things and figure stuff out. And you aren't given in the book that the wheels are turning because you don't get to see facial expressions quite the way you do in the movie. Extremely intelligent character, which I think you see in both the film and in the books. There's a whole lot of other things pulling at Fletch that you know about in the books than you do. In the movies, you feel like really he's only got one thing going, which is solving whatever's in front of him and maybe avoiding his ex-wife. Whereas in the books, there's always three different things going that Fletch is trying to balance. There's usually the crime that he's trying to solve. There's an employment issue or a money issue. And then there's usually always a woman involved. It's either a woman on the side or it's his wife. And, right. and they're always all these things are always tearing at him to be in five places at once. And it adds a lot more tension than you can really put into a screenplay. But, and he's not as mysterious in the movies as he is. But then again, both movies cover a time period of one Fletch in the books, where the books cover many decades. And later in his life, the character is filthy rich, doesn't work, international man of mystery, book author. He all of a sudden he's a huge stockholder in a cable news organization and basically doesn't work for a living later in his life. So there's all types of different Fletches too throughout the series of books that are, keep it fresh and interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I always felt like when I read Fletch 1, I always felt that, like, the Fletch in the book was a little more, like, put together, a little more serious, a little more straight. He still was very witty, but he was more kind of a straight guy. He didn't dress up in the, like, weird outfits, and, he didn't, like, he would never... Like in Fletch 1, when I read it, because that's the only Fletch book that I've read.
Which is a prequel to the Fletch that the movie's based off of.
And would dress up in like that, like kind of Gandhi looking outfit with the roller skates and stuff like
right.
that. They're like Hare Krishna looking, you know, thing.
Well, film is such a visual medium, and you know, and you could describe that in a book, but it wouldn't work. In a film, it's just like a quick ha ha, isn't that silly? But imagine trying to read that. It would just be like, what's going on if you tried to read that on the page?
Right.
And have that silly music, you know, playing in the background when he's rolling down the street.
Yeah. See, that's definitely the difference between an adaption. You know, one thing, they're two different mediums for sure. And part of it is also the personality of Chevy Chase.
Yeah.
I mean, he brings some of it, a lot of his personality to that role. I mean, right. he had his witty banter already from Saturday Night Live and doing his news updates. But a lot of the personality of Fletch in the films is very much Chevy Chase at that time.
Now, would you recommend for people that love the movie, would you recommend like reading the books then?
I mean, absolutely, but I would tell them not to start with the same title. Don't go with Fletch. Go to Fletch 1, W-O-N,
well,
Fletch
because, 1. Because they're written, even though that you can look chronologically. Right?
They were written all out of order.
Yeah, they're written all out of chronological order.
It's crazy how he's stitched this guy's life together, but wrote them completely. I think Fletch was the first one, but then he went back a decade in his life earlier and started when he was a young upstart newspaper reporter that was, you know, having to write titles, headlines for the obituaries. And which in itself is the beginning of Fletch One is amazing because there are so many joke throwaway headlines that his editor accuses him of writing in order to catch attention where there was never attention needed to be drawn. It's followed by Fletch Two, which I mean picks up seconds after the previous book ends, which is funny. And then Fletch is obviously the one that the movie's tied to, is a great book. It follows up at the end of the movie, Fletch, he ends up in Brazil, you know, because he's owed airline tickets for nearly being incinerated in someone else's car, whatever the line is.
Yeah.
It picks up in Brazil, and actually he stays in Brazil for that entire next novel. So
I really wish in Fletch Lives they would have explored a little more of the character of Fletch instead of just like, hey, let's try to capitalize on all the funny stuff and try to recreate the same movie in a different setting. Because, like, we see, like, the lawyer, you know, like the ex-wife lawyer or whatever, needing alimony payments again.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, we never get to meet Fletch's ex-wife. Yeah. You know, we never get to see that. We never get to see deeper, you know, into Fletch. And almost the Fletch Lives, the character of Fletch, was kept more at bay. It was more about him being fish out of water and exploring this other weird world.
That's really, to me, it's one of the biggest flaws of Fletch Lives, and there are many, but the biggest is they established Fletch in the first film, they established his world, and they immediately abandon it for a much more farcical story, take him out of his element when they had just established what his element was. So you never really get to see Fletch be Fletch that much.
Well, and Fletch Lives starts off, like, the opening scene sequence is so promising. He dresses up as, like, this maid, right? And that he's trying to like listen in on these gangsters making deals or whatever, trying to like money laundering or whatever. And this like old guy with glasses, like you can't really tell. He's like trying to like pinch his butt and stuff. Like
yeah, he's flirting with him.
I think it's just ripe for a reboot.
I mean, you could almost make Fletch into a TV show.
Yes.
I mean, and do like different things. I mean, if you wanted to do that, if you wanted to capitalize on what was funny, then you could turn that into an hour TV show.
I think in this era of binge watching TV and like where shows are meant to be consumed all at once in like these marathon sessions, a thing like Fletch would be perfect for like that format.
I mean, the movie Psych. I mean, not the movie. The show Psych.
The TV show Psych is
very similar to this.
I feel like even to the point where every single episode, one of the characters, it's a buddy cop show. If those people that don't know it, it was a TV show on USA Network that ran for 8 years. And it's the guy Dulé Hill from West Wing that played Charlie and another guy named James Roday. They play two buddies and they're cops, but one of them is a psychic detective, but not a psychic detective.
Yeah.
So they're constantly pretending to be someone else, lying about it, and then introducing the other one with a fake nickname, which was totally ripped basically from Fletch.
Well, and what was and the main character, the guy that was like psychic or whatever, he has all these witty lines just like Fletch would have. I mean,
it's
he's very
Fletch-like.
Right. I mean, and he passes himself off like, you know, like he has psychological abilities. So, but he doesn't. But, I mean, he has to think on his feet all the time. Yeah. And think and about how am I going to trick somebody that I'm psychic.
Fletch, I wouldn't say, is full of pop culture references, but he makes references to famous people and things and times. And and that psych television show is all about 80s and 90s reference culture. Yeah.
Well, really, it feels like a lot of times, not to diverge too much, but it feels like psych was almost like a Fletch remake without where they didn't have the license to use the Fletch IP.
Right.
You know? It's like they wanted to make a Fletch show, but they didn't have the rights to Fletch.
But, they added the buddy cop element to it.
That's what I was going
to
say.
And so it's still mystery, but it's still – and I think really they have to owe a lot of credit to Fletch for putting funny with mystery together, because nobody really nailed that quite as well as Fletch did. And lots of people have had tacked on top of it. You look at Psych and you take away the stupid factor or the silly factor and you get The Mentalist. Which ended after like three seasons or four seasons and was not entertaining, at least in my opinion. But Psych ran for 8 years.
Right. So we'll chalk that up to one of our recommendations if you want a TV show to watch. Binge watch. Psych. But and I think what's the guy's name that played the — you said his name.
James Rhodey.
Incredibly talented actor.
Yeah, and a writer and a director directs horror films. A lot of horror films. In fact, you might check that out.
I actually didn't know that, and I should. I feel like I've followed that down on my job, you know, as I am a film journalist.
Well, and he's actually in a TV show A Million Little Pieces. A Million Little Things.
Is it Things? Yeah, Things or Pieces, one or the other?
We could look it up, but we're not going to.
It's A Million Little
Not that kind of show,
I've
ladies
actually
and
watched the show.
Okay.
So to bring us back on task, gentlemen, would you recommend the double feature of Fletch and Fletch Lives to someone?
I would, just because I think that it's to see if Chevy Chase play that role. Chevy Chase is that role, and even though that it has some flaws, just know that Fletch Lives has flaws, but enjoy it for what it is and enjoy the good scenes for what they are.
I completely agree. I that's like I tried to explain to you earlier. Fletch Lives is not great, but I still laughed and found myself enjoying it.
Yeah, it's true.
And Fletch, of course, is a Stone Cold classic. So I would easily recommend them to someone who liked, you know, again, Shaggy Dog kind of hangout, college, you know, bro kind of comedies.
And because the group is never wrong.
Right.
I wholeheartedly agree.
Right. And you just have to forgive the racism references and things like that.
Well, just know, like, we spoiled it for you. It's meant to be farcical, but it is a little cringy in Fletch Lives.
Little cartoony, little, you know, it's just far-fetched and, like you said.
I'd say go watch Fletch, and when you're stuck on that long international flight and you can't go anywhere, it's a good time to queue up Fletch Lives.
Well, if you have HBO, right now they are available both of them are available on HBO.
All right.
Boom.
All right.
That's why I watched them. I'm not going to lie.
Solid recommendation.
So let's get into the cool facts about Fletch. This you two are not going to believe, but in the 1970s, Burt Reynolds and Mick Jagger were considered to portray Fletch, but they did not, because Gregory MacDonald said, oh, heck no.
I can almost see Burt Reynolds, because that's Smokey and the Bandit Burt Reynolds.
Yeah, this is in the 70s, remember.
He was snarky, he was cool. I could see it. It'd be weird. But Mick Jagger, no.
No.
Have you seen Free Jack? Mick Jagger cannot act.
Well,
I don't think Fletch would ever work English. I don't think Mick Jagger has an American accent. I could be wrong, but
I'd be surprised.
Gregory MacDonald was right to say hell no. All right, so the author agreed to Chevy Chase, but Gregory never saw anything that Chevy ever did. All he knew was he was on Saturday Night Live, and he was in Second City doing improv. He said, fine, sounds good. MacDonald sent Chevy Chase a telegram saying, I am delighted to abdicate the role to Fletch to you. So basically, Gregory...
Abdicate?
Abdicate?
It's not the kind of podcast where we pronounce words correctly.
Abdicate. It's what royalty does to their thrones. Abdicate the throne.
Thank you, Mr. Announcer.
We are not editing a bit of this out, ladies and gentlemen.
No, it's because Andy is our announcer guy. He's our MC.
Instead of Chevy Chase writing MacDonald and saying, I have usurped all other actors to play Fletch.
Well, no, I think it just shows that MacDonald was you know, giving him the role.
Like,
here, you take your creative license with it. You take it in different places. Andrew Bergman was hired to adapt McDonald's book into a screenplay form. So Andrew Bergman, like, he wrote the screenplay. So hold on a second. I get my notes. I can't read a damn thing. So Richie invited McDonald to this. I can't read. I cannot read.
We're leaving this in too, ladies and gentlemen. We're leaving this in.
All right.
Because Ryan's too lazy to edit it out.
The reason why...
Andrew Bergman was hired to adapt McDonald's book into screenplay form, and McDonald read the script and was angered by the deviations from his original text. That's a mouthful. So the director invited McDonald to the set and then to dinner and basically proved or like showed him where he was wrong. And McDonald had to go, yeah, you're right. It doesn't work.
There are two different mediums for sure.
Yeah. So there was a dream sequence about Fletch as a pitcher, as an L.A. Dodger, that's missing from the final cut of the film. And
but he hates Tommy Lasorda.
But it's supposed to explain why has a much disdain for Tommy Lasorda.
So was it written and not shot, or was it shot
it
and edited
out?
It
was shot and edited out.
Ooh, so somewhere, one day, there might be dailies released of that.
But I do know that they used Kareem Abdul-Jabbar scenes that they shot were shot on video. They weren't shot on film, because the whole idea was it's supposed to be a dream sequence. He's supposed to be watching TV and this stuff is happening. So I don't know where this footage is, or you know what happened to it, or what the deal is.
Mm.
But it never made the film. But it was, I think it was supposed to be like he's a pitcher, and then Tommy Lasorda like takes him out of the game or something like that.
Well, I think not knowing why he hates Tommy Lasorda makes the gag funnier.
I agree, and that might have been why that they left it out, or the scene just didn't work with Tommy Lasorda. Yeah. I mean, who knows? According to actor Tim Matheson, Fletch was the first film that Chase did after cleaning up his drug problem.
Hmm.
So
I never knew that Chevy Chase used drugs.
Yeah.
I'm making a sheepish grin when I say that.
I'm just going to shake my head. During photography, so how the Fletch was shot. Like, remember we talked about, like, he actually directed both Fletch and Fletch Lives.
Yes, he directed both.
And the way he knew that Fletch, like Chevy... Wood is from, you know, improv school and Saturday Night Live and all these other things. So what he did was he knew that Chevy was going to have a heavy hand in trying to rewrite or do improv, you know, do the thing.
Yeah.
But he also wanted to keep to this great screenplay. So he came up with this plan of, we're going to do the scene my way and get it done. And then we're going to do the scene Chevy's way and we're going to get it done. And then in the end, they're going to cut everything together. And I think this works really, really well, because you don't, it's not so silly, and you can also cut out the bad jokes. So you can cut out the bad jokes and then you can leave the seriousness where it needs to be.
Yeah, you can really feel Chevy's influence in the sequel. Like you tell that he had a lot more pull over what happened in the sequel.
But it's directed by the same person.
Yeah. I don't know. It just feels like there's a lot more of that Chevy Chase kind of, you know, Pratt Folly quality to the second movie.
Yeah, well, maybe because the script wasn't as...
I think the
was
script
more
was
weak.
More kind of written that way. I think that more had to do with the writing rather than the acting. But, I mean, they use this a lot now today.
It's a very common thing nowadays.
It's a very common thing. Well, I mean, because now they shoot on digital, so they can just do, like, a whole bunch of scenes
together.
But back then,
35 millimeter is not cheap.
No. Mm. So it was made, I mean, the budget was like $8 million. I mean, it was like really small. I mean, think about it. There's not that many, you know, stuff.
No one was really noteworthy in it at the time except for Chase.
Yeah, you're just following around him to all his different stuff. Yeah. So, Harold Faltermeyer wrote the Fletch theme.
Axel F.
Well, no, it's not. It's called Fletch theme.
Right.
So he wrote a very...
I'm just saying that's the same guy who did Axel F.
He's the same guy that did Axel F.
That everybody knows.
Right. And if you play this, like if you play the song without context, somebody might call that song the Axel F. song from...
Right.
Yeah. But no, I mean, yes, he also wrote Axel F., which is also very memorable.
He didn't just do the soundtrack. I mean, he actually does some of the scoring. So a large portion of the film has those synthesizers with the bended notes. It's something that's very easily recognizable.
And hopefully we won't get sued from copyright infringement for that. So
that was totally not recognizable. It's the actual song.
We may edit that out, ladies and gentlemen. We may edit that out.
Here's a weird thing about Harold Faltermeyer that you guys may not know, and I didn't even realize this. So Harold Faltermeyer was working on a dream sequence for the movie Fletch, and then Billy Idol was, working across the hall there. And
this is the 80s rock star Billy Idol.
Yeah. So and then there, but Harold Faltermeyer's in the studio, and he's actually recording music for both Fletch and for Top Gun, right?
Right.
He's like writing like both these things and working on it. So he started working on this dream sequence, like music or whatever, and came up with this thing. And then like Billy Idol came by and Billy said, yeah, that'd work great for Top Gun. And he was like, yeah, that's a good thing. And then
he was like, rock the cradle with the love. And then he left. Right.
Yeah, then he left. And that's what wound up being the Top Gun theme. The
So that theme was almost in Fletch.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't get a suit, Ryan. Stop singing the bars of the songs, man.
Yeah, I'm sure the copyright lawyers are listening to this podcast.
I'm sure they can. I'm sure everybody can really recognize those notes from the near part. All right, yeah.
Fair use.
But I mean, it is a very well.
I had not heard that before. That's neat.
Yeah, but yes, the budget was $8 million, and it made $59 million.
That's impressive,
right? It didn't make number one because.
Would have been Rocky.
Four,
wouldn't it? 89?
No, the Rambo 2.
Well, yeah, Rambo 2 was 89.
Yeah. No, that was. Or maybe Rambo 1. I don't know.
Rambo 1 was in 79, dude.
Yeah, so Rambo 2 was like 85.
I'm just impressed that 85. You guys remember that stuff.
Yeah, so that was. Rambo 2 was.
Yeah, I was thinking 89 was Fletch Lives, yes.
Yes. All right. So. Can you believe it only has Fletch only has a 76% rating on Rotten Tomatoes?
That's still really high for that kind of film, though, if you think about it.
I mean, for like a comedy, for like a silly, kind
of
comedy.
Did you look at what any of the big critics saw? Did you see what Ebert thought of it?
2.5 stars.
2.5 stars.
Here's
Ebert's not always right. Remember, he was a big fan of Spawn. I just want to point that out.
I mean, for a comedy like that, to give it 2.5 instead of just 2. Though, I mean, he gave it that half. Remember, that's out of 4.
Oh, yeah. I keep forgetting his scale is a 4-star scale.
His is a 4. But he says, and I quote, "The problem is Chase's performance tends to reduce all the scenes to the same level, at least as far as he's concerned. He projects such an inflexible mask of cool detachment, of ironic running commentary, that we're prevented from identifying with him."
He's not wrong, but I guess whether you dig that or you don't dig that.
Yeah, and then he said Fletch needed an actor more interested in playing the character than playing himself.
My inner monologue identifies with Chevy Chase a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, I know he plays himself. I know it's like kind of like this cool detachment, but I mean, come on. Well, it's hilarious.
And part of it is because we grew up with it, so we have that perspective on it. I mean, he's not you can disagree with him and realize he's not really way off base.
Right.
You just don't agree with his opinion.
From a film critic perspective, sure.
Yeah.
But as an enjoyable movie, I'm going to sit down and like pay $5 and like laugh my butt off. Yeah. It's a great movie.
Yeah.
All right.
I agree.
All right. Okay. So I also found some quotes from three of the guys like looking back retrospectively on the film. And Andrew Bergman says, "It's so bizarre, but Fletch strikes a chord. There's a group of movies like that in the 80s, like Caddyshack, that captured a certain wise-ass thing." And then he says, "In particular, the film appeals to college students who have asked Chase to talk about it in film classes." I mean, and it's true. I mean, it's like almost everybody I know in college had, you know, Pink Floyd posters and Fletch.
It's true.
Chevy Chase says the cheekiness of the guy, everybody at that age would be like to be as quick-witted as Fletch and uncaring about what others think.
That's the appeal for sure.
Yeah, Chase has said this film is his favorite to date because, quote, "it allowed me to be myself." Fletch was the first one with me really winging it, even though that there was a script, the director allowed me to just go, and in many ways, I was directing the comedy. So there you go.
Oh, I love how he takes credit for things, isn't
he? He is still Chevy Chase.
That's true. That's true. But I mean, a lot of it, I mean, some of it were his jokes. I mean, oh, yeah. He threw in, you know. McDonald said in 2006, he says, I watched it recently, and I think Chevy and Michael Ritchie did a good job with it. So, I mean, the director approves.
Or the writer approves.
The writer approves.
Right on.
Yeah.
Fletch Lives, the bar where Ed Harley comes in and, like, does that whole, like, scene. That's the same bar where Pee Wee Herman does the Pee Wee Herman dance.
Tequila.
Does a big shoe dance, yeah.
Yeah.
And it says, in the scene where Fletch is singing Zippity Doodah, the Underhills from the tennis club are dancing right behind Fletch with their tennis rackets and everything.
He came back from his urinalysis.
I wonder if he still has his credit card number. And then the character of Jimmy Lee Farnsworth satires real-life televangelist Peter Popoff, directly mimicking his powers of healing touch and being radioed information through a hidden earpiece. So in a podcast interview with Kevin Pollak, Josh Molina. Now, you, I think, even listened to this podcast, Andy. Josh Molina reveals that Josh worked on, Kevin Pollak worked on the movie as a production assistant, and that Chevy Chase asked him to suggest a funny M name to use as an alias. Molina suggested Mahatma, and Chase used it in the movie.
Right on.
All right.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Although they had no scenes together, the two girls, the two like love interest of Fletch, would star together 2 years later in a NBC drama. That was weird. And then the writer of Fletch Lives, Leon Capitanos. So he never really did much. And that's probably why we never heard from him. The budget for this movie was exactly the same, $8 million.
Really? Because it looks more expensive.
I don't know. But it only made $39.5 million. So when you look at the budget, I mean, one made $56 million, one made $39.5 million.
Yeah, they probably missed why we never saw Fletch 3, I suppose.
What do you think Roger Ebert gave it?
I'm going to say 1.5.
2.5.
He liked it as much.
He gave
2.5 stars
rating for both movies. Wow.
But he says the same thing kind of we did. Chase is at arm's length from the plot, making little asides and whimsical commentaries, while his hapless supporting cast does what it can with underwritten roles.
Again, Ebert's spot on with his analysis.
The movie has two good things in it. One of Chase's dreams turns into a funny satire of Zippity Doodah number from Song of the South. So he thought that was hilarious.
He just caught me so off guard, man. I was not expecting it to break into Song of the South.
Nope.
I mean, I guess Song of the South was kind of big back then. And then the second is he liked Arlie Ermey's like performance.
Arlie Ermey is great in the movie. He really is. I mean, he's wonderful in his role.
I mean, that I think really gave like really spawned Arlie's like comedic career because I mean he was in Full Metal Jacket like before that.
Yes,
and it was very serious, very like drill sergeant. He was very sort of typecast as that. And this is like just a totally kind of a different role.
It showed that
sure.
he had range.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
But it only has 37% on Rotten Tomatoes.
I can see
have spoken.
I can see critics being a lot harder to it. I mean,
yeah, it says they lack his Fletch Lives lacks his its predecessor's wit, relying instead on silly disguises, cheap stereotypes, and largely unfunny gags.
The cheap stereotypes are what really hurt it for me. So there's a lot of cringy stuff in there that you have to just kind of get past to enjoy it.
I just think that and the fact that there was the plot is almost forgotten about.
Yeah, and it doesn't really matter even. It's so silly when it is there.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and even when the plot does show up, you're like, what the heck is going on? Like, yeah. You don't know.
It needed more Hal Holbrook.
Yeah, most things do, really.
Yeah, this is true.
He's great. He is, yeah.
Okay, so let's catch everybody up real quick on... We can't talk about Fletch and Fletch Lives without talking about the Fletch 1, production or non-production or however you want to talk about it.
Well, if you have the internet, you're up on it. If you don't have the internet, you don't even know what we're talking about.
It's one of those great projects that just that one of those great never were projects that almost happened.
The never green lighted Fletch prequel.
It lived only in the world of rumors and backroom deals that never worked.
Yeah. So I mean, I did a little research to find out like where it is now.
Oh, good.
I remember being so excited to find like the Fletch One like fan page, like back in like the 2000s and the dawn of Google and all that kind of stuff.
And again, to straighten some make people understand, it's Fletch, WON1, as in it's a play on words for being the first in the storyline. But yeah,
right, exactly. Or like you won something, like you win a prize.
It's a pun, right?
So Kevin Smith acquired the rights through Miramax in 2000 for the third Fletch film, which was, but the Harvey Weinstein, who was then the co-conspirator for Miramax, I wouldn't say conspirator, but just whatever.
He was a principal owner.
He was one of the owners.
Did not approve of Jason Lee. Because Jason Lee, I mean, because you have to remember Jason Lee at the time.
Still
I mean,
the Mallrats kid,
exactly. And the movies that he had been in were not that.
They weren't successful.
Yeah, they weren't too successful. So, I mean, Harvey didn't want to greenlight it. But he said, why don't you do, you know, Ben Affleck? Well, you know, Smith didn't want to have put Ben Affleck in that.
Yeah, Jason Lee at that time probably would have been great. Because he had kind of that young Chevy vibe to
him. Yeah, I mean, think about only a few years later, My Name is Earl came out.
Yeah.
And really, I mean, there again, you talking about Fletch being better suited for television, that would have been a property that would have done well.
It's another Fletch-like show. Yeah, totally.
And also the other disagreement was the level of involvement from Chevy Chase. So, like, how much that he was going to be in the film, how much he was going to be, like, part of the film. Because they wanted, like, I don't know. But I know that his role wanted to be bigger, obviously, than probably that Smith sort of envisioned.
Yeah.
And there might have been some people that felt like the movie became more bankable if Chase was even moderately involved.
Right. So it kind of sat around, didn't really do much. Smith finally abandoned the project in 2005. It was then picked up by Scrubs writer-director Bill Lawrence. So, I mean, like that whole the scene where they're talking about, you know, Fletch. I mean, that was written by Bill Lawrence. I mentioned too before about. So he was a huge Fletch fan, and then Zach Braff was going to play Fletch, but you know Zach Braff wound up doing his own project, and then so all of that got scrapped, and you know Bill Lawrence was out of the picture by 2007. It was then picked up by Steve Pink. So Esri probably knows who Steve Pink is. He wrote Hot Tub Time Machine, Gross Point Blank, and High Fidelity.
Which are all great movies.
And we need to talk about Gross Point Blank because we're going to do that one at some point.
Let's not spoil the fun.
That is a fun but strange
movie.
It's
not the next episode, people, but at some point. All right.
We're pro John Cusack.
I agree. But that all was forgotten about. That was like back in 2007. And finally, in 2011, the rights were purchased from Miramax to Warner Brothers. Warner Brothers bought the rights, and it was announced in a Hollywood Reporter in 2014 that there was finally a script that Warner Brothers liked, and Jason Sudeikis was in talks to play Fletch.
I feel that's an odd choice.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about too much about all the rumor mill about who would play Fletch in a modern, you know, kind of thing. I mean, there's been tons of people that have Ryan Reynolds and Zach Braff and, you know, all these people have come with this
close
really
almost being,
this witty banter and all that kind of stuff. One thing I also want to mention about Kevin Smith and why he wanted to do Fletch. I do know that listening to his some of his I don't know if you call it stand up or his spoken word
stuff.
That he learned how to write scripts by reading Fletch books.
There you go.
It shows in his writing.
Yeah, because I mean, like you were saying before, the very beginning of the episode,
banter.
How that back and forth, like sort of banter in the dialogue, he was like, it. And really reading a book is as close to probably, I think, that you can get to reading a real screenplay.
Yep.
So, Anyway, that's all the notes I have.
Well, I mean, they were excellent, Ryan. So I guess we're nearing the end. So let's kind of wrap it up. Final thoughts about the Fledge series, guys.
I mean, like I said, I love it. I think they're great. I would recommend the books. I would recommend the movie. Watch it with your friends. You know, watch it by yourself. Laugh. But I mean, I think that you have to really, if you let, there are some people that are kind of turned off by Chevy Chase. So if you're one of those people, you probably will not like Fledge.
No, it is very much like pure, like unfiltered Chevy Chase in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You either dig him for that period of his life when he was really at the height of his comedic power, or you find him smug and irritable. And, I personally like that period in his career. I think he was very funny. I think he was at this point he's very underrated. Mm-hmm. I think at least Fletch is a classic, and Fletch Lives is pretty fun.
I'm just going to lean on my sales technique and say that if you haven't seen it, it's worth your time. If you haven't read the books, go to a used bookstore or hit one of the websites that sells used books. Mm. It's not like a Harry Potter novel. It's not like 4 inches. They're quick reads. They're, you know, a half inch, and they're in paperback. They're very inexpensive. You can get most of them for under $5. They're entertaining. They're a good read, and it'll help you chuckle through the movie a little bit even more, I think.
I think I'm going to check them out, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, they're real page turners. I mean, I remember watching, I remember reading Fletch 1, and it's just like, for somebody, I don't read a lot of books, and, you know, I kept like turning because it's just dialogue. It's like so easy,
yeah.
You know, because there's not all these pages and pages and pages of just descriptions of things, or like carrying on like months of time, or explaining like these other things that they're doing. I mean, it's like, it's mostly just action, 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 action. Everything is wrapped up in like a few days. So, I mean, you don't really get a whole, you know, 'cause it starts and then like about a week really.
Yeah.
I mean, that's about how long the novels are. It's like a week of time. Is that right?
Yeah, that's about right. So, yeah, I would recommend it. I just want to say that I'm really glad, like Mick Jagger and Burt Reynolds were people before Chase, that Michael Ritchie wasn't the first director. But we were lucky that Lionel Ritchie wasn't available because he was too busy dancing on the ceiling.
That's bad.
Yeah.
So we're going to use that to lead into
right. So people's speakers are now melting down from the bad pun. Yeah. I'll be quiet.
All right.
Yeah. So my recommendation, yes, to go, well, what movie do I think would pair really well with Fletch?
Yeah.
There's a film also based on a book. It's by a man named Thomas Pynchon, a very famous novelist. It's a book called Inherent Vice.
Okay.
It was made into a film in 2015 by Paul Thomas Anderson. Yes, Paul Thomas Anderson of Boogie Nights.
Okay.
And, you know, that prestige director, he made There Will Be Blood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, series director. He made this book into a film. The book is about a hippie detective in the 1960s California who kind of bumbles his way into a very convoluted crime plot. It is very kind of Big Lebowski-esque. It's very Fletch-esque. It stars Joaquin Phoenix as a guy named Doc Sportello.
Mm-hmm.
What an excellent name. And it's just it's a fun kind of hangout kind of movie. The plot is convoluted and weird and it's a little bit silly. It's got kind of this kind of like Shaggy Dog kind of punchy quality, just like the Big Lebowski and Fletch. I think it would pair very well with Fletch.
Right.
And I think if you want to see another movie that's kind of like this, but you don't want to go with the obvious route of saying the Big Lebowski.
Right.
Check out Inherent Vice 2015, Paul Thomas Anderson, starring Joaquin Phoenix and Josh Brolin.
Inherent Vice. All right. That's probably, I mean, all of Esri's recommendations, Andy. So, 'cause I don't know how many episodes that you've listened. These are the ones that are like the video store would have like one copy and it would be on like the very bottom shelf.
Might have a little dust on it.
Yeah, exactly. Right, but on. They're really good. I mean, they're like, you watch it and you go, gosh, why can't more people like make movies like this? You know,
I watch a lot of movies.
He always has the really obscure ones that I love. I mean, I would say my sort of popular recommendation, if you like Fletch, I mean, Van Wilder comes to mind.
Van Wilder's a good choice.
I mean, yeah. I mentioned the Big Lebowski earlier, but I think one of the elements I think that's really missing in the Big Lebowski is like Lebowski's kind of just bumbling his way through.
Yeah.
He's not a detective. He's not really invested in the story at all. He wants to like get out of the story.
Yeah.
He puts it all together.
He's
in
very
the
passive.
End. Yeah. So there's some similarities in the way the kind of story goes along, but the characters are completely different. So yes, if you want like witty, funny, you know, comedy that's just like very outlandish, and also Tim Matheson is in Van Wilder.
Yeah, and Ryan Reynolds in that role definitely has a kind of young Chevy Chase kind of. It's mostly like banter and witty asides, and him just being too cool for the room. Again, it's very Fletch-like. That's a really good call.
Right. And also, well, I mean, PCU kind of, but I mean, Jeremy Piven, but.
We're just going to nail all of the college films.
Yeah, for this episode. I mean, yeah. But yeah, that's another college favorite too, is PCU.
For sure, for sure.
If you're into that kind of thing. But really, so do you have any recommendations for any other movies if people are fans of Fletch?
No, I didn't come prepared with recommendations.
That's all right.
Do you own a pair of rubber gloves?
At least with the option to buy.
Solid.
It's all about ball bearings.
Hey.
Well, guys, I think that's it for this week's Video Culture. I'm Matthew Esri.
Well, thank you very much to our
guest. Of course, I got ahead of myself.
Andy Morris, thank you very much.
We have a new person. I'm all thrown off today. Sorry about that, Andy.
That's all right. Thanks for having me, guys. And if you want any more voice work, I work real cheap.
All right.
We will have you back anytime, my friend.
Well, thanks for working for the right price.
I do have a seven-figure fee. It's a zero followed by six zeros.
All right. There may be some pizza in the future.
All right.
Well, until next time, I'm Ryan Acri.
And again, I am Matthew Estrie.
Well, I guess I'm Andy Morris.
I guess you are. And thanks again for listening, guys. And we'll see you in a couple weeks. Go watch some movies.
Oh, for God, Don.
What is this man saying? What is this man doing?
What in the hell's the matter with you?
What is this man's name?
My name is Igor Stravinsky.
Hi there, I'm Harry S. Truman.
I'm Don Corleone.
They call him Fletch.
Fletch!
Fletch!
Fletch, F. Fletch.
He's good at defending himself.
You better tie your shoelaces.
Disguising himself. And getting himself into trouble.
Well, it be Fletch. Go ahead. Make my day.
He's a reporter.
There are no tags on these mattresses.
Who's about to write the story of a lifetime.
Will you kill me?
Sure.
If he lives.
Thanks a lot!
There isn't a woman he can't charm.
Can I borrow your towel for a sec? My car just hit a water buffalo.
A question he won't ask.
You and your wife are currently alive, I take it.
Drop your shorts and bend over, Mr. Babar.
A risk he won't take.
Probably feel 100%
Moon River. To get to the truth.
Well, looks like you two have a lot to talk over. We'll just catch the last 10 minutes of Dynasty.
Universal Pictures presents Chevy Chase as Fletch.
My hero.
Nothing to it.